Well, you know I love I love the show, folks. Okay, but the story coming up on today's show about the fight that Russ had with Pat Burns, his head coach, is off the map. Okay, off the map. You got to listen to that. How about Russ, the only guy who could have a beer with his coach when they were on the road when he was a junior? Him and Brian Kilray. I don't know how he pulled that off. Somebody say the worst trade ever. Russ Cortland for Cordic. He speaks about that. And he weighs in on the Leafs' demise. We love hearing about that. Grapes, McLean, that's finally winding down. Russ has got a good opinion of that. And another night where he, one shot, wiped out a guy's chiclets. Hilarious stuff coming up on the Suspendables. That and much, much more. Stick around. There it is, the White Claw. How are you, Rusty?
I'm good, buddy.
You know, I was a little lonely this week, Russ. I live alone. I got a little lonely, and I was started looking for the... Hey, I got to get doing the podcast with Russ. Fills my week, you know?
Well, just, you know, every morning when... Well, hopefully every morning when you have a shower, you look in that mirror. You know, that's why you're alone.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I always throw it out there for questions, okay? And this week on Twitter, I had a little joke contest for starters, okay? Give us your lamest joke, right? It had to be lame, okay? And but the one guy who won, I don't think it was very lame, but it was hilarious. His joke was, I'm really amazed at how different my twin daughters are. Lisa is so much more positive and confident than her sister, Hogface.
That's brutal.
Isn't that terrible? Anyway, I throw it out there, Rusty, for we do this podcast every week called The Suspendables, and our partners, Global Story Network, have been with us through thick and thin, but it's been all thick, right? What's better? I don't know what's the better, thin or the thick? And it's going great. And I throw it out there for questions for Russ. And these are big-time listeners now who've listened to every show. And, you know, they've asked about the Hound line. They asked a good question about the rivalry there last week between you and Quebec. Mm-hmm. But the two questions, Russ, which were repeated several times, is the number one question for Russ, where do I get those White Claws? Okay? Some people want to know. And another guy, ask Russ, do you hit or stick on 16?
Hit.
Always hit.
On, right? Seven or higher showing, you got to hit.
You got to hit her, baby. There you go. How's the week, Russ? Where you were away again. You were in Hawaii or Mount? Where were you?
No. I was out watching my son Lawton play and his hockey team at Western Michigan in Kalamazoo. Paris and I went. Had a great weekend. They won the first game, lost the second. But it was a great trip. And then, yesterday, Sunday fun day, we didn't leave till 7 o'clock last night out of the zoo. And, Paris and I made them American Thanksgiving dinner. So the boys were happy and we watched football, watched the big game when Vikings come back and win.
Yeah. I saw that.
Mm-hmm. And then off to the airport with a little bit of a wine glow on and, slept most of the way back to LA.
Beautiful. And how's Lawton doing? He's playing for Western Michigan. Yeah, and how's he doing?
He's doing good. He's getting better all the time, and he looks great out there. Looks strong, confident. So it's fun to watch as a dad.
Is it really fun to watch? I couldn't watch my kid in a track meet. I was so nervous.
Why? Because they were going to come last.
Well, she did. As a matter of fact, she did. It was in high school, and God bless. I was crying like, you know me. I'm a crier. You're a crier too. And she didn't really want to be there, but you had to do it. And she came slugging through at the finish line. And you know, she was, this is a few years ago. But do you really have fun, or is it just too much to take as a parent?
No, I enjoy it. I've loved watching his progression. And it's interesting, you know, at times, and the ups and downs and dealing with your son or daughter, but... This year's been really good. He had a little bit of a dip, and Andy kind of called him out on a little bit. Like he, I don't know what he did. He took a penalty, bad penalty, and they scored. And he sat that period and just Lawton was crushed. And then ever since then, he's come back stronger and better and he's playing well. So right now we're in a good spot. No, he's doing good. They've been bit by the injury bug there and it's tough. They've missing some players, but one of his buddies and roommate, Wade Allison, third round pick to Philly, really good players. He's been injured and he had a shoulder injury this weekend and so he unfortunately had four buddies drive down from Manitoba, from Carmen, Manitoba, these four knuckleheads, 15 hours each way. And I think they'll remember the car ride down and back, but they won't remember being in Kalamazoo. Idiots. Oh, my God. They were so shit-faced the whole time they were there.
Right.
You know, they get across the border and the booze is so cheap. They're just pounding anything that they can get their hands on, and they were just...
It's always, the jury's out, right? How your kid is going to handle that 4 or 5 years of life where they turn the legal age. And it's funny you bring that up because about how kids get smashed, you know, their first sort of outing, you know. I drove to Florida in a car with some university buddies at the last minute.
Yeah.
Like we're at the pub that night. Florida's about it's not a very long drive. Like I think you can do it in about 20 hours, you know?
Oh boy.
And off we went the next day, three of us in a Volkswagen Rabbit. Remember those cars, the little rabbits? Three of us in the back and we're getting jumpy. Okay. We're kind of hungover. My brother's with me and my brother's a fucking maniac. Okay. He's just a maniac.
The one who punched your lights out?
Yes. The one who punched my lights out. And I was bugging him. So back in those days, everyone smoked in the car, and there were cigarette lighters, you know, that you shoved the cigarette lighter in, then it popped out, and you got this glowing wire that you lit your smoke with. And he pushed in. I thought he was going to have a smoke, and then he branded me in the side of the fucking leg with it.
Oh.
Settle down, you know.
Oh.
That's my road trip story in university. You bring that up, though, Rusty. A couple things I want to talk about. When you're giving us a little update on your son, this is... I don't know what their exact schedule is like, but it's 20 games in for the NHL. And this is the time when people start to sort of seriously weigh in about what teams are doing, what their season's been like. And I want to ask you, the Leafs, there's a couple things here. The Leafs are nowhere near what they're supposed to be. They're 9-9-4. And at what point, Russ, when a team who has super high expectations, do you start to look at making changes, coach, players? What's your take on that?
Well, it's tough because they're at the cap, right? So it's tough. It's like they really made their changes. So unless they can trade, you know, salary for salary, I don't know what they do, but.
What about the coach?
Well, the only time I think when it's time for the coach to go is if the players are not listening. So if his message is old and the players aren't responding, then chances are the coach is next. And we've seen it over and over and over, you know, year after year, coaches get fired. And I've always said coaches are hired to be fired. And a lot of coaches know that they have a window. Barry Trotz is probably the only guy that, you know, he seems to stay longer than most, other than, you know, when he left Washington there for New York. But I don't know, man. It's just if the room's lost if they're not listening and they don't like the coach, then you probably got to move. You got to get a new guy in there. And that if you spend a lot of money and expectations are high and it is Toronto and something's got to give. And so I'm sure, you know, the media is obviously talking about it probably every day, and only the inner working circles of the Maple Leafs. Shanahan's done a great job in Toronto, and I think he'll continue to do a great job. So I'm sure it's weighing on him, because the expectations are there now for them to win, where before he was building, and now he's built, and there's, you know, they're not going to get the pass anymore that they got in the past with, oh, we'll get better next year. We're building. They've built. And so the city's expectations are rightfully there now with the players they have. They're really on paper right now. They're a really good team. In the beginning of the year, they look great. And then, I don't know, stuff happens.
Right. Marner's hurt, of course. One of the
Yeah, of course. He's such a great player.
Three of your buddies have weighed in on the Leafs because they're in town for the Hall of Fame inductions. So there's that. You must have played in that Legends game, or is it only for Hall of Famers?
No, I have played in that game, and they put a team together of alumni players to play there against each other. So yes, I have played in that game, and it's a fun weekend for obviously everybody involved, and especially the guys who are getting inducted and their families. Great reflection on their great careers, and so yeah, that game's a lot of fun. So a lot of guys come in for those games.
So three guys that you played with, certainly at the same time, are there. And this is typical of Toronto. I will say this, that when the team's going bad, all they want to ask is, why is the team bad to everybody? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so they've asked. Matt Sundin was there.
Yeah, I liked his response.
Yeah, and Wendell Clark and Mike Gartner. Was Wendell a captain of the Toronto?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so all three of those guys rest their comments without getting into it too much or quoting them. I'll paraphrase, but all of them said some interesting shit that had nothing to do with the talent on the team. But Sundin said, you know, you need character guys. Mm-hmm. That's the time for them to step up. Wendell Clark said, you need a really tight room.
Same thing.
Mike Gardner said, you need them to gel and all. It had everything not to do with saying we need three guys here. We need our bottom six are shitty. It all had to sort of do with things away from the ice.
Well, they've got to come together, whether they like the coach or not. And Bob Gainey once said they won all those cups, all those years in Montreal, and a group of them didn't. I don't know how to say this, but they didn't like Scotty Bowman. No, it wasn't Scotty Bowman. It was another guy. He went to Serge Savard and talked about the coach. I think it was Jean Perron at the time. And mm-hmm. And I think Serge Savard said to Bob Gainey, like, you know, when we won all those cups with Bowman, how many guys were going, we love Scotty Bowman. We love Scotty Bowman because he was so tough. And I think Bob was telling me this, or us this in the room, maybe in Dallas, that, you know, whether you like the person or don't, it's the group in the room that's going to take you out of where you're at. And so, yeah, you can change the coach, but I'm probably contradicting myself, but it is exactly what those guys are saying, that the group of players are going to eventually figure it out and get them out of it. But there is a point in time when coaches get fired just because the players stop listening to them and they're not doing what the coach wants, or they, you know, whatever. And so if the easy fire is to let go of a coach. But they are 100% correct that the character in the room is what's going to get guys out. And that's, I mean, we saw it with St. Louis, right? Last year,
right.
Coach, fire the coach, new coach comes in, but they lost right away. They didn't win. Like it didn't just change the next game.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what his record was in the first 10, but it wasn't crazy good. And then in January, they started buying in and coming together and working and working and working. And then we all saw what happened after that. So yes, they made a coaching change, but it took maybe a new voice. And then the players just said, they must have just said, you know what, we got to do this together. And boom, they went all the way and won.
Well, what's the word, Russ, on Mike Babcock? I, as a fan, go, fuck, I don't like that guy very much. He's just not a very likable guy. I don't know if it's just me. But even guys like Tortorella, you know, he's goofy, crazy, outspoken, but I kind of like the guy. But I don't Babcock. What's the word on him?
I mean, I've heard things from players my age, not from anyone that plays for him now. I mean, I knew Austin Matthews when he was a little kid, but not mm-hmm. in touch with him now. So I don't have the intel of what's going on in the room now. And I heard he was tough, you know, from players that played for him that are up from my era. But I don't know what he's like right now, because Pat Burns, I've talked about in the first 4 years, he was just brutal. And mm-hmm. over time, I'm sure he got better. But I don't know. I imagine, you know, he is tough, but I don't. The coaches today, I know a few of them, and they just say he can't be hard on guys like you could in the past. So you got to kind of walk a fine line. So I don't know how tough he is, but I know in the past he was.
You brought that up before. How come he can't be as tough on guys? I forget what your answer was.
Well, I think it's just the new breed of players, the contracts, the, you know, Kelly Chase sent me a, how do you get what you want? Like, how do children get what they want today? Is it just, or people, they say they're offended.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. I'm offended. Okay, yeah. Here, have whatever you want.
Yeah, here's the car keys. I'm sorry. I was going to ground you, but instead, here's some money for booze and go take the car. Yeah.
I'm not coaching. I haven't coached in a long time, but I know that I pissed off a lot of parents when my team, God, it would have been 10 years ago. I had all these kids I was coaching had long hair, and I'm like, you can't even see out of your freaking helmet. So mm-hmm. I made everybody cut their hair, and oh my God, the backlash, especially from the moms,
right,
was just brutal. I had five moms come up to me and talk to me. Well, you know, we can't talk to you about hockey, but socially this isn't correct, and they're getting teased at school because they got their haircuts. And I said, well, I'm here to coach your kids, not hold their hand at school. So I'm sorry, but they can't see out of their fucking helmets.
Yeah,
and so. You know what? They're cutting their hair so they can play. You know, hopefully they can see on the frickin' ice. We had the Bad News Bears, but anyways,
good for you. That shit just makes me cringe when I hear a parent going to weigh in with a coach about their kid. You know, Brian Kilray.
I love Brian Kilray. I played for Brian in
no way.
World Juniors. I was his captain at the World Juniors in Sweden when I represented our country, and Brian was awesome. So he, sorry to cut you off, but I was his captain, right? So he goes, Russ, curfew tonight at 10:30. We're in Sweden, right? He goes, I'll be in the hotel bar. You check all the guys, make sure they're in, and I'll meet you in the bar at 10:45. So he goes, I want to hear if anyone's out. I'd come in, I'd go around, check on curfew. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in, which was kind of embarrassing as a player.
Right. And go drink with the coach.
No, they didn't. No one knew. I never told anybody this. So everybody just, you know, hey, coach wants to make sure everybody's in, knocking doors. Guys are like, yeah, fuck off.
Right.
And then I went downstairs, and Brian, I go up to Brian. Everybody's in the room. Good night. And he goes, no. Sit down here. He orders me a beer. And his uncle was on our trip at that time, and
his brother,
brother or whatever, and he played pro hockey, so he had a bunch of stories. And anyways, I had a couple beers and with the coach, and then and the trainers and everybody, and then went to bed. But he was great, and I loved him as a coach. Should have been the coach of the Maple Leafs back then. They could have hired him, but New York Islanders got him instead.
Of course, and he had a bad run there, right? He didn't last very long. Actually, that was one of my most embarrassing interviews. The first week I was in radio, they brought on Brian Kilray, and we're talking about the 67. He's like the winningest coach of all time in hockey, period, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I said, Brian, it would make sense to me that you would go to the NHL at some point, you know, and there's a big pause. The guy looked at me and said, well, you moron, he was there.
Oh, no.
But I think he's retired, of course, and I think he's a host at a restaurant in Ottawa.
No way.
And loves to do it and seats people at lunch and stuff like that. But my favorite story, when you talked about putting down the law about, okay, cut your hair, you pricks, you know, because I told you to. You know, he was riding the bus and he smoked, right? He's a big cigar smoker. And he would smoke on the bus, right? And the parents were dropping their kids off. And one of the mothers came up to him and challenged him on this smoking thing, right? And everyone who knew Brian, what he was like, went, hey, this will be good.
Yeah.
Okay, this will be good here. The mother said, hey, my son's on your team, and I'm so-and-so, and his name is so-and-so, and Gallardo, call him Gallardo. And she said, I don't appreciate you smoking on the bus, and you shouldn't be smoking on the bus, you know, with these kids. And he said, oh, is that right? Right? And she said, yeah. And he said, what's your son's name again? And she said, it's, you know, Peter Gallardo.
Yeah.
And he went on, he went on the bus. He says, okay, hang on one sec. He says, Gallardo, your mom's here to take you home.
That's Brian.
Yeah, she's going to drive you to the games, I guess, from now on. You know, he was awesome. He was just absolutely awesome.
Oh, he was so good.
Yeah, I love Brian Kilrey. Grey Cup, Russ, you're a Canadian.
Yeah.
The Grey Cup is set up. Hamilton and Winnipeg are in the Grey Cup. And it's the first time that none of them have won it since the 90s. So it's someone's going to break a long-standing record here. And I love the Grey Cup. And most of what's happening on my Twitter this week is the drunkest stories at Grey Cups. Because for those of you who don't know, it is affectionately called the National Drunk.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, it is. And I can vouch for that. I've been to many Grey Cups. And my favorite, you talked about these kids who came down from Manitoba, you know, and I went on this tear.
Yeah.
And I've been in many situations. But through it all the stories I have about drunk guys trying to get on the horse from Calgary, there's been some crazy shit that's happened. But my favorite was watching a guy stick his card, his ATM card, into the hotel room door, thinking it was a bank machine. I don't know why I remember that one specifically, because I've seen people go absolutely bananas, you know, at the Grey Cup, and some have weighed in, Russ, with their. I'll let you think about. Did you ever go to any Grey Cups?
No, never. I watched the Grey Cup. Did I watch the Super Bowl with Bob Uecker in Montreal when I was 18? Mm-hmm. I think I watched the Super Bowl with Bob Uecker. Yeah, Bob Uecker and Bill Waters, my agent at the time. We watched the Super Bowl in Montreal at Manoir Lemoyne, the hotel.
Oh, there you go.
And Grey Cup, I have not been to a game.
Here's some of the stories that people have had from Grey Cups. Okay. Started off at a stadium. By the end of the first half, I was sitting in a hot tub at the James Street Feed Company bar wearing only my underwear. Still don't know who won the game. Love that story. A buddy of mine pulled down his, they were outside. You know, some of these Grey Cups in the day, Russ, before BC place, it'd be like minus 20.
Oh, my God.
Buddy of mine pulled down his skidoo suit to drop a deuce and unknowingly shit his pants. I can't get enough of the shit. Here's another drunk story. A guy says, 5-hour bus ride, lots of beers on the way down and back. This is a golf tournament, not a Grey Cup story. Next day, chatting with my playing partner on the first tee, I asked him who he played with yesterday. He said, you.
on that note.
Yep. There you go. Nice. And then there's a fake account on Twitter called Mike Babcock. Fake Mike Babcock account. And he says, we once signed a prospect to an entry-level deal, and he turned out to be a real prick and a kid. Well, Lou didn't like him. I guess he's talking about Lou Lamoriello. Dosed him in rum and set him on fire. Jesus. Outside the back of the ACC. Oh, anyway. I might go down. It's in Calgary. I might go down for the game. We'll have to see. Couple other things before. We want to talk about your buddy there, 15-year NHLer, who's gone over to Switzerland.
Yeah,
Scotty Upshaw. You had mentioned to me, give us the history with you and him.
Well, Scotty, I met a year and a half ago at a member guest up at Gosser. We won it. And he came back this year. We won our flight, but
of course
I choked. He is just a great guy. So I, you know, hockey players just get along. I mean, you throw freaking hockey players in a room and the stories start and it just reminds you of another story. And it's just, it's a story-a-thon and drink-a-thon sure. And it's just fun. And so he, you know, he's a young player and I admire my hockey buddy. So I love this kid. He's a great guy and very interesting, single, and he couldn't get a deal this year. So he went to Europe and he's got a big game. He's in Ambre over in the Swiss League and they're playing against Lugano on Friday night. And it's a huge rival for them. So I've been following him on Instagram and he's just, you know, sucking the life out of, in a good way, just enjoying every minute of being in Europe versus, you know, sitting around sucking his thumb going, I should be in the NHL. He's over there. He's going, he's traveling. He's seeing the sights and he could have a long career over there too. So good for Scotty and hopefully he's, teammates on Friday night kick some fucking Lugano ass because they'll have Scotty will be in one Friday night if they're I don't know if they play Friday Saturday but he'll be in one this weekend if they win so he'll probably be in one regardless but he's a great kid and really enjoy playing golf with him hanging out with him and just hearing all the stories of what it's like to be in the NHL today and the girls over there will be happy that Scotty's in Europe. He's a good-looking guy, and he's single.
Some of those guys, Russ, I heard, it's a great way to if they've got kids, I don't know, he doesn't. He's single.
Right.
But some of those guys go to Europe to say, what a fantastic experience for my children, you know?
Yeah.
To be able to go over there and play hockey and see it. So I understand some of that. A couple other questions someone had, speaking of that. One guy wants to know, Russ, when a team, I guess this is probably back to the Leafs a bit, when a team signs a guy to a huge contract and perhaps starts to show that he was undeserving of the money and not you know, playing up to what he was expected to, how does that affect the other players on the team?
I think there's two parts to that question. And the one is the player that is playing great and they sign him to a long-term deal, they've won or whatever, and then there's, call it an 8-year, 7-year, 6-year deal, and the last 2 years he sucks because he's just older and injured. And I think that's different. As a player, you just say, hey, you know, he's at the end. And it's the player that would sign and then just shits the bed right off the hop. Those are the players that players look at and go, fuck, I can't believe they signed this guy. He's, you know, never done anything and got all this money. I think that those are the guys that would, you know, you would look at and go, oh my God, I can't believe that guy got all that money. But a lot of the players on big contracts got it because they were playing well and they were good players. And now they're just on the way down. And I saw today that, what was his name? Ladd in New York. And I just, on Instagram, I saw it that he's on waivers and they got to pay him till 2022, 23. Well, he's only played 26 games in the last 2 years. He's been injured. You know, he's a good player and now he's injured. So I don't think anybody is looking at him going, you know, they shouldn't have paid him all this money. He got paid the money for a reason and now he's, you know, older and he's been injured. So I don't think players look at that poorly unless there's no money for them to get paid. Cause that happens too, right? Where there's, oh sure. My God, we're paying this guy and we can't pay him. And that happens. So,
right.
Especially if you wanted to stay in that city where you were having success.
You brought up trades. Someone's brought up, ask Rusty about the most lopsided trade in the world was you and Kordic.
Oh yeah.
Talk about that.
Well, I was playing for John Brophy and we did not like each other. He didn't like me. I didn't like him. And the first 11 games in Toronto that year.
Why? I got to interrupt. Why would nobody like you?
I was a bit of a rebel when I played, and I was a bit of a rebel, and you know, I was young. I was only 20 at that time. I was 23 years old, and I'd been in the league since I was 18. Mm-hmm. Wily veteran, but I wasn't.
Right.
Maybe thought I was, but I just. The team was playing well, and he wasn't playing me, and so they decided to trade me for John Kordick because they lacked toughness. And it was the best thing that happened to me. I'm thankful for the trade because then I went on to play in Montreal, and my career took off again, and learned a new position. They moved me from center to right wing and spent the next 10 years playing right wing. And learn to play the game in both ends of the rink. You know, I'm thankful for Montreal and Pat Burns doing that for me. And it, you know, probably it did extend my career because I could play defense and obviously kick in some points here and there. But everybody is always fans are like, oh my God, that's such a brutal trade. And I go, nah, it was a great trade for me. I mean, on paper, maybe it looked like crap, but you know, at that time they wanted a tough guy and they were 7-4-1 or some, I don't know what their record was, Toronto at the time. And then John was having serious problems off the ice in Montreal back then,
right.
Drugs and all that horrible stuff, and we know the rest. Most people know about John Kordick. He ended up being killed or, you know, dying in an altercation with the police in Quebec. Right. And it was all driven by drugs. And so it was sad. Sad for him, but it was great for me. And, you know, it's... You get traded.
The trade was great for you.
Well, it was great. You don't look backwards. I mean, you don't look backwards when you get traded. That team who's traded for you, they want you and they want the other guy, and you go in with they got open arms when you first get there, and then the honeymoon wears off after 10 games, and then you're just, you know, another player on the team, and
right,
you got to play or you're toast.
The grapes, the Don Cherry, Ron McLean thing is. This is sort of the first day that it's been quiet. You know, as everyone knows, Don Cherry got fired for talking about an incident of immigrants that they should wear poppies. Coach's Corner is over. The long-standing 37-year run of the intermission show with Don Cherry and Ron McLean. Ron McLean's a buddy of yours. I haven't seen anything new with the thousands of comments that people are saying he should be fired, others saying he shouldn't. It's all the reasons are the same from everyone. Ron McLean went on. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it and
spoke for 5 minutes. What did you think of that? What he said?
I love Ron. He's a good friend of mine, and I could imagine, like, he's not there yet on what he did, you know, and how he responded and stuff. It's just I think for me, I wish he had a. I'm sure everybody in the world wishes he had a. Said something right away when Don said you people. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was thinking about that from our last show, and he always said you people out there, you people, doesn't matter who he's talking about, you people out there, you know, Don. Mm-hmm. I don't see Don all the time. I live mostly in the US, so I don't see him all the time, but when I do see him, he's like, you people. Anyways, I'm sure everyone could have handled it better. Even Don said, you know, I should have said everybody out there.
Right. He could have kept his job if he would have apologized.
Yeah.
Grapes. He could have. Ron McLean's in a tough position, you know. He's first of all, he works for the same network that fired Grapes, of course, obviously. And I listened to it, and I thought it was confusing a little bit. When I heard, I couldn't quite follow what he was saying, and he's a very, very good speaker.
Oh my God.
He's unreal.
One of the best.
Yeah, one of the best, and I just couldn't understand it, and I came away saying, you might have want to read a written statement there, Ronnie.
Well, you know what? I think what for me, I think when he first came out and said what he said, mm-hmm. it was to me, it was like they were telling him what to say. And then this weekend was him saying, you know, I hear you, Bobby Orr commented on it. A lot of people, I hear you loud and clear. And Don's my friend and we've spoken. And I think that was more him speaking from the heart. And the next day when he came out and said what he said, it was like his boss wrote it for him and said, you know, we condone this. You know, this isn't who we are and all that.
Put yourself in Ron McLean's shoes. What do you want him to do? You know, he's not going to quit his job on some sort of moral high ground here, right? He's like, fuck.
Well, when you have a boss, like I remember I got in a fuck you fight with Pat Burns in Chicago when he sat me out. And mm-hmm. Sir Savard, after the game, told me if I couldn't, you know, make it up with Pat, he was going to have to do something with me. And he goes, look, when you have a boss, whether you like it or not, you got to freaking listen and do what they say. Mm-hmm. So Ron McLean has a boss. And whether he liked it, he had to say what they told him to say. And Serge Savard told me that loud and clear. He said, I work for Ronald Corey. That's Serge telling me that. Work for Pat Burns, who works for me, and I work for Ron Corey. And I may not like what Ron Corey tells me, but I don't tell him to go fuck himself when I don't like something. And Pat Burns told you something that you didn't like, and you called him a fat fuck, and you called him this. And
did you really?
Oh, yeah. And it was an argument of all arguments. And so I learned then that, you know, until you're the boss, you know, you gotta toe the line, and Ron McLean has a boss. So right. Until he one day retires and can speak his mind exactly how he wants to, or you know, write a book or whatever. Right. I mean, he's got to do what he's got to do, right?
What was the fight with Burnsy about?
It was in the first 15 games, kind of where you are with Toronto Maple Leafs right now. But they didn't like the way we were playing. We were winning. I was like second or third on the team in points, and he was really pissed off at Stefan Richer.
Right,
but he wasn't going to sit out Steph. He's our best player, 50 goal scorer with Patrick Waugh. They were probably our two best players, and. Mm-hmm. And so who's the next guy? He's like picked me out of the crowd, and he just started, you know, nitpicking. But I thought I was playing good. Mm-hmm. And then he had it out for me. And then he sat me out. And so I disagreed with him, and I let him have it after warmups, because when you get sat out in Montreal at the time, they wouldn't have your towel up. You'd have a sweat towel or whatever when you came off the ice. There wasn't a towel. So I'm like, you're out. So me and that, like two other guys, they'd sit out three guys every game.
Right.
So I had rarely been sat out. So that was my first time as a Montreal Canadian and my first time. Mm-hmm. And I broke my stick, threw it against the wall, I was pissed off. And he came in and said, what the fuck's your, Courtney, what's your problem? And I went, you.
Oh, no.
And he went, shit off and get upstairs in the fucking press box and watch the fucking game with, you know, something like that. And I go, fuck you, you fat fuck. And he said, what did you say? And then just all hell broke loose, and it wasn't good, and I felt horrible after. I was freaking crying in the shower, and then after the game, he told everybody in the, you know, all the coaches and trainers and everybody told Serge Savard what I did and what I said, and Serge took me off when we got back to the hotel in Chicago, the old Marriott, I'll never forget this, that huge human being, Serge Savard, took me aside, and there was this big cement column, and he started kicking it like with his beautiful black size 16 shoes, like, probably. Kind of kicking it, and the more he talked, the harder he kicked the post, because Serge really liked me as a player. Right. He traded for me. Mm-hmm. And anyways, he was like, you gotta make up with the coach, and if you can't, then I gotta suspend you, or I'm gonna trade you. I don't know what I'm gonna do with you if he says, you know, I can't work with Russ Courtnell anymore. And that's when he went on and told me about working for somebody. Not one of my finer moments, and I learned a lot from it. Because I got sat out after that. I was sat out a few times after that. Mm-hmm. A couple times in Montreal later, at the end of my time there, and then at the end of my career, I got sat out probably over the course of 16 years. I probably got sat out. Mm-hmm. 7 to 10 times, maybe. Oh, over wow. The course of those 16 years, and not one time felt good.
Right. So. Right. But you love Serge, right?
I love Serge Svart, and the worst mistake I ever made in my career was I asked to be traded through the media in Montreal, and I'm sure I've said this on the show before, and it just put Serge in a horrible position, and felt terrible for it, and I made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And one of those chalk it up to a shitty life lesson, but it followed me for a long time after that. It wasn't good. It was like a black cloud over me. But anyways, I love Serge Savard. He and Pat Burns, I've said on the on our show that they're the two best hockey guys I've ever met in my career.
When you talk about being outspoken, telling a coach to F off, was Chelios in Montreal when you were there?
Yeah, my first 2 years, and then he got traded.
I've heard incredible stories that guy just got away with murder with the shit he would say to coaches. Is that true? Was he lippy, mouthy guy?
I mean, they coaches love Chris Chelios, and maybe at the end of his career, that I don't know what it was like at the end when, you know, he kept playing and you know, it got tough. You could see that he was winding down, but I think most coaches loved having him on their team. Sure. So I don't know what he would have said, but to a coach, but he's got a lot of balls. So I think if Chelly had something on his mind, he'd probably say it.
Yeah, right. I just wondered whether it was a story. Before we go, a couple things in hockey. Colorado's playing Vancouver the other night. Matt Colvert with the Avalanche gets hit in the face, gets hit in the side of the head. A shot from Pettersson.
Yeah.
And Elders goes on to score. But the guy's lying flat in his face. He's in his defensive zone. I think it's a power player, empty net or something. Or I don't know what it was. But anyway, they go on to score. But they leave the refs leave the guy lying there. and they played around the fucking guy.
Yeah.
And scored.
Oh, no.
And, like, for an extended period of time. And then all hell broke loose. The people are freaking out, talking about player safety and shit like this. But no one's ever seen this in a long time, or if ever, that the guy was, there was blood on the ice. He got hit in the head, man, with a puck. Yeah. And people are freaking out about the refereeing, talking about player safety and all that. It apparently meant shit after that happened.
That's brutal. I hit Todd Elnick in Minnesota, our last year in Minneapolis.
Right.
Before the North Stars, before we moved to Dallas. And I went around the net. I came up. We were on the power play. I did a little turn, and I stepped into a little. The puck was wobbling a bit, and I freaking ripped a slap shot.
Yeah.
And we were playing the Vancouver Canucks, and Kirk McLean, I think he was.
Sorry, where were you playing, Russ?
I was playing for the Minnesota North Stars, playing against the Canucks, but we were in Minnie.
Okay.
And I turned and I fucking ripped the shot, and it went right at the goalie's head, and he ducked. And Todd Elnick was behind the goal. It hit him right in the forehead.
Jesus.
21 stitches. I think it was 21 stitches, but it knocked him out cold. And when he hit the ice, he lost all his front teeth. Oh, no. Oh, it was like, and the pool of blood, it was so thick, it was like purple. Yeah. And it looked like he was dead. Like he was lying face first in his own blood. Out.
Jesus.
So at we, you know, the game goes on, they scrape up the blood and we play. It must have been in the third period because I got showered up and I went by the medical room and I see him laying there and they're stitching him up and I go in and I go, Todd, I'm so sorry. And he looked at me and went, fuck you.
Oh, well, you got to give it to his goalie. Pal, you got to stand in front of that. You might have to take it in the face.
Oh, you know? It wasn't my fault.
What? Yeah, it wasn't my fault. Yeah, don't blame me. One of the funniest I heard was a friend of mine years ago got traded. His guy's name was Vince Magna. He's probably older than you. You might not even know that name, but he played in Hartford and got traded to Toronto. He's a tough guy. In fact, he was a roommate of mine. And when he came into camp, they said, this guy's a freaking time bomb. You know, he's tough. We need him. But walk lightly around him, you know?
Yeah.
And they went into practice. They were having a practice, and they were shooting on the goalie, and the goalie wasn't really trying.
Oh.
So Vince wheeled around and wired one at his throat, right?
Oh, no.
And next thing, the goalie comes at him with the heel of his stick to chop him, and it busts Vince's shaft, you know? And he's just got about, you know, 15 inches of shaft and begins to beat the guy in the face with the old Cheever's mask, you know? Anyway, I love that shit.
And it was Todd Ellick. I was saying Elnick, but it was okay. Todd Ellick.
All right. I'll mark that down. Put it in our show notes. What'd you think of, you got your daughter's boyfriend playing in the NFL. Did you see this horrendous helmet incident?
Oh, my God. So thank God that guy hit him with the open part of the helmet.
Yeah.
Not the...
So what happens is Myles Garrett plays for the Browns, Cleveland Browns, one of their linemen, defensive guy. And I guess he tackles the quarterback. And the quarterback, actually, for Pittsburgh, Mason Rudolph, tries to rip his helmet off.
Yes.
And so a lot of people don't realize that. And then this guy, Garrett, ends up ripping his helmet off and full on trying to smack the guy in the head with the helmet. He's been suspended indefinitely. They don't know how long, certainly for the rest of the season, another six games.
Yeah.
And playoffs, they say right now. Of course, they're appealing it. But I have never, ever seen anything like that, Russ, in sports. That crazy.
No. I've heard a lot of crazy stories. Like I heard Cashman back in the Bruins days trying to step on somebody's throat with his skate when he was down in the pile. And, you know, I was on the ice when Boreas Allman got stepped on by accident by Bob Probert for 180 stitches. By Jesus. Accident. Yeah, yeah.
It was an accident or are you
being Well, it's, I mean...
We don't know.
God rest his soul, but we don't know. But Bob, it didn't look intentional, but oh, it was gross.
I got a question for you. If that happened to you, Russ, I've always been a naysayer on going outside of the league to police themselves, you know, to go to court or to bring outside legal stuff into it. If that happened to you, would you get a lawyer and sue a guy?
No.
Say you had the helmet. Say the guy tried to smash you with his helmet.
No, that would be like Moore and.
Ooh, I know what you think.
Yeah, I mean it's just the league has rules, and they have a committee that goes over the penalties, and that's it. I mean.
Attaboy. I'm glad you said that.
No, that's just a pussy move.
Attaboy. Rusty, I'm ending the show with a joke.
Oh.
Okay. Now listen, Russ.
Would you tell us a fucking good one for once?
Well, don't trump my joke. Last week you trumped
my joke. Okay, I'm not going to. Ladies and gentlemen.
That's taboo. You cannot trump a guy's joke.
Okay, I won't.
Okay? You can't trump a guy's joke.
Okay.
So, what's worse, Russ, than waking up... What?
Shut up. Oh, sorry. Okay, go.
And I'm sure this happened to you or guys wanted to do it.
Okay.
What's worse
than waking... I'm ready. Hang on, I'm ready.
What's worse than being, you know, you're passed out drunk, What's worse than waking up and seeing they've drawn a penis on your face? You know what's worse than that? Realizing later it was traced. Oh, I'm laughing at my own shit, Rusty. What's up for the rest of the week, partner? What do you got going?
I'm just hanging Nothing. Out. I'm hanging out in L.A. We've got Thanksgiving coming up in the next 2 weeks. Allie and Eric are back from Minneapolis because he's got a bye week. So they're going to be, or at least she's home. I don't know when he's coming. Brooklyn will have soccer and, you know, just hanging out. It's beautiful here right now in sunny Los Angeles.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. How's it in Edmonton?
Yeah, it's nice. It's beautiful. Yeah, it's just great. Yeah. Anyway, I never know what to say to that. You know, I'm like, I don't know. I hate that thing of Russ, where he's living that life.
Hey, my wife, Paris, she gets all excited when we do these shows because she walks the loop at Sherwood. Takes about an hour, so she loves listening to our show. And she said to me this morning, is Wednesday? Is the show coming out Wednesday? And I go, yeah, it comes out Wednesday. Okay, good. But anyway, she loves the show. And she's getting a little jealous, too, of where I've been traveling.
Yeah, I bet. When can I interview Paris without you?
Well, just let me know.
Okay.
We can put her on next week.
Okay, I want to set that up. You're going to step aside. She's going to throw on the headset. We're going to find out about Russ Cardinal.
Oh, boy.
There's a nice show teaser. Another episode of The Suspendables is in the book, brought to you by Global Story Network. Russ, I got like 20 people who've ordered shirts.
Oh.
Our Suspendables shirts. Yeah.
Nice. And I put a picture up on Instagram. I'm going to... the Suspendables Instagram. I've been starting to put up pictures because you don't know how.
So. No, I don't really.
And I tag you, you idiot. So respond.
Tag this. Okay. Tag this.
Yeah. Well, at least say, bust my balls or something.
Okay. I will. I'm going to start to do that. You want a t-shirt? Email me junglejerome@yahoo.com and we'll get you a t-shirt.
You might have to move out of that studio apartment because you've started a new business. You won't have enough room in there for all the empty boxes. All the boxes.
I regret doing this, but I'm into it now.
Yeah. You've now got to know your UPS guy.
I know. It's just, why'd I ever do this? Yeah. But anyway, there'll be a
collection. Hey, George, how are you? Want a cigarette? Hey, and you know what? You cannot keep those t-shirts in your freaking studio apartment because they're going to all smell like smoke. And then you're going to have that lady who complained about her son on that freaking hockey team with Brian Kilray complaining that, you know, oh, you sent me a t-shirt and it reeks like freaking an ashtray.
Listen, Russ, it's, that makes it authentic. It's going to stink like smoky. You don't want to smell one of my other shirts, okay?
Hey, don't wear the shirts before you freaking send them either, you fucking pig.
Right. Have another white claw. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
And I will have another white claw.
There you go. Beautiful.